The Ric Flair Show.
My name's Ric Flair.
Woo!
Woo! To be the man, you gotta beat the man. And I'm saying, woo! Right here, I'm the man.
The 16-time world champion.
Woo! Back behind the mic and telling it like it is.
Woo!
If you're not carrying the big gold, you're second best no matter what you tell yourself.
I'm the best!
Y'all playing catch-up ball. To the Nature Boy.
And now, your hosts of the Ric Flair Show, Ric Flair and Conrad Thompson.
Woo!
Ladies and gentlemen, this is the Nature Boy, Ric Flair, along with my co-host, Conrad Thompson. Welcome to the Ric Flair Show. Conrad Thompson, as you know, is the second wealthiest man in the state of Alabama. He owns the Conradison. He owns First Family Mortgage. He's in 80 cities, kids. 80 cities. Let's do it. Let's say one thing for Conrad. Woo! 35 years old, making $10 million a month. What's wrong with that, guys? Our guest today is one of these guys in the business that I've known over the years that I had chemistry with second to none. He and his partner, along with Arn Anderson, Sting, Dusty Rhodes, Lex Luger, Barry Windham, Nikita Koloff, who was lucky to be there. These guys brought chemistry and drew more money than any tag team in the history of the business. I'm talking about the Road Warriors, and today our guest is my good friend for so many years, Joe Laurinaitis. Animal. How are you, man?
Hey, Nate. What's up, my friends? How are you?
Thanks. Good. How are you?
I'm doing well, man. I'm doing well. Just, traveling around the country, doing these Comic-Cons that I see you at every now and then.
Yeah. So are you married now?
I'm close enough to it, man. I've been with the same girl now for about 5 years, so it's I probably won't be getting married any day.
That's miraculous.
Yeah. Hey, how about yourself, bud?
You're just like me, man. Well, I've been with Wendy 4.5 years. Are you kidding me? Jesus.
Wow, that's great, man. That's great.
Yeah, I'm very happy. No one ever saw it coming, but it's worked out great. So Joe.
Hey, it's always nice when you find a great woman.
What's that, sir?
I said, it's always nice when you find a great woman.
Yeah, it is. God, I've looked for a long time.
Well, I think the problem is you found too many great women, Rick. I think that was the issue. You found too many great ones.
Yeah, Joe knows them all, too.
Yeah. Back in over the years, there was so much styling and profiling going on.
Yeah, God.
It's hard to keep track.
So, Joshua, tell them about the flight from San Juan to Portland. With the Delta flight, the American flight attendants that came to the hotel.
Let me address this flight from San Juan, Puerto Rico, to Portland, Oregon. We're going from working for Carlos Colon all the way to work for the great Don Roman's Dress and Soul in Portland, Oregon, right? Here we are. Now, it's basically the whole middle section of a big DC-10, and it's just Ric Flair, the Nature Boy, Road Warrior Hawk, Road Warrior Animal, and Precious Paul Ellery. So, needless to say, on a long 8-hour journey like that, we have the night off for that night for some reason. We have to work the next night. So, probably the worst thing you could do is put us all on the same flight together, because when you do, libations will be flowing rapidly. Let's just put it that way. And back then, you didn't have all these strict FAA rules and regulations, right?
Yep.
So after about 4 hours into the flight, Nate goes, "Hey, Animal, reach up there and grab my bag." And I said, "Which one?" He goes, "The one with the robe." Oh, and I'm thinking to myself, "Oh, no, I know exactly where this is going to go." I said, "It ain't going to be good. It's going to be funny." Needless to say, Ric Flair takes the garment bag with the robe into the restroom. I'm out. Nothing on but alligator shoes, his socks, and that darn robe. And at the end,
I used the bathroom instead of the telephone booth.
But the size of it was like Superman taking off Clark Kent taking off his stuff, and out comes Superman. That's what it was like. All of a sudden, the door opened up, the walk started, and all you heard was "woo," and it was on after that.
Well, the best part of the story is, so the flight attendants come back and party was at the hotel, and the one chick wanted Mike to paint her up.
Three o'clock
in the morning, the flight attendants walked around the hotel floor so hammered, completely naked, with road warrior paint on her face.
Yeah.
I think you'd gone to bed by that time, but Mike was relentless. That chick fell in love with Mike. Jesus Christ. He put the paint on, then he put a dot in the middle of her forehead like she was a Hindu. Oh, yeah. Flight attendants were fun back then. Now it's a little different.
a good reason why they are. Nothing to do with the wrestlers, by the way. But, I mean, you know, hey, today's, you know, flying today is way different than it was flying 20 years ago.
Well, you think? Jesus Christ.
Yeah, I know, sure. Right?
And you have to be very careful about your conduct. You know, as I found out in the Boston airport about 2 months ago.
Yeah, what was that? I heard about that. I heard bits and pieces. What was that all about?
I don't know. The guy at TSA had a problem with me. What the story is, I had been out with Dean Ambrose all night long, and I had been gone from home for 34 days on a European tour. And I just, I should have realized when I fell over the bed, when I woke up in the morning to get ready to go to the airport, that I probably should have taken another flight. I rolled into TSA looking as old way I could look.
you know the way the next morning is going to go. I remember a few times in the Ramada Renaissance at the Atlanta airport. World champion, the greatest single world champion of our time that we'll ever see, in the luggage cart and wheeling them up to the room and saying, "Stay in your room."
That was me?
Yeah.
God, I forgot all this stuff.
Almost as bad as my partner, Hawk. You put Hawk to bed after being on about 10 inebriated pills he took, and then he'd be down in the lobby 20 minutes later again saying, "Hey."
I know. God. I know. Well, Joe, I just want to say this on a personal note. I mean, I don't think people understand totally, and we can talk forever, but, man, the Road Warriors and the Four Horsemen. I mean, I'm telling you, Conrad, we were in Philadelphia one night, and Joe and Hawk painted up Dusty, and it was me, Arn, and Ole. 10,000 sold out at the Civic Center. This is when we were going head up with those guys. WWF, when they were at the Spectrum, WWE now. And when Dusty came out with that paint, I mean, I remember, I think I've told this story before. I've never heard a crowd so crazy in my life. Remember that? Charles Barkley was sitting ringside, and we didn't have to even, Ole said, "Let's cut these guys off." I said, "Why would you cut them off? They haven't sat down yet since they walked out to the ring." You remember that, Joe?
Oh, yeah. You know, Philly is such a great town for wrestling to begin with. Yeah. You know, and Rick was right. If you could feel, I don't think that you are ever, ever, ever going to see that happen again in the wrestling business, period. And it was just an era of the wrestling business. Here, you know, you have the greatest faction of four guys together in the Four Horsemen. Then you have Hawk and I, who have been crowned as the greatest tag team ever. Then Dusty Rhodes, one of the best single performers ever, all in the same match. For me and Hawk, I can speak for Hawk now that he's gone and everything else, but, you know, it was like going to school for Hawk and I. It was back in the day where we just shut our mouth and let the champion say, "Okay, here's what we're going to do," and the people went absolutely crazy. It was, we really didn't have to do anything, man. When you're in the ring with four guys who the people really, and it's a testament to how great they did their job. When guys do their job phenomenal, people wanted to see them get their butt kicked. Not because they hated them. They just knew, okay, here goes the equalizers. The great equalizers are going to get you now. And it was just, for us, it was such an easy job. It wasn't even like going to work every night. It was like going to play.
No, it really was. I mean, and my God, and we must have worked, literally, I'm not exaggerating, Conrad, over the years, we probably worked 1,500 times.
Wow.
Because the war games went on for I don't know how many years. That was 40 nights in a row or 42. And believe me, you got the Road Warriors, Mike, Joe, then you got Iron, me, Barry Windham. I forget who all else. We were staying at the Tropicana in Vegas for that five-day run. Remember, Joe? Oh, my God. It was exhausting. Then we stopped at Kansas City on the way back for one more. Oh, man, we've had so much fun over the years. But chemistry. So, Joe, let's talk about the War Games, man. How cool was that?
Yeah. Oh, man, the War Games is probably one of the single best invention matches that I've ever been involved with. I mean, here you got two rings side by side with a cage over top of both rings. And I think what the first two guys went in for, Rick, how many minutes? 4 minutes or so? And then every two minutes after that, two more guys. Another guy first, went in.
The first,
guy
period, went in. The first period was 5 minutes. Man, it was always Iron and Dusty.
Yeah. Yeah. That's because if it was Hawk or I, Hawk and I would have thrown up after that 5 minutes.
Now, we always left Mike for last. I don't know why. He killed everybody when he came.
I remember the first war games we did, right? Here we're all in the ring together, and Hawk's the last guy to get in. Now, if you ever seen a cheetah or a black panther at the zoo who's caged up, and it's just pacing back and forth and back and forth and back and forth, it seemed like for hours, that was Hawk. And when Hawk came in the ring, all I remember hearing out of three of the four horsemen's mouth was, F this blank, because Hawk knocked out Luger, and then he knocked out Arm. He hit Tully in the teeth, and then he nails Nature Boy. I mean,
it was brutal, Conrad. We deserved a bonus after each one of those. Then the one in Atlanta, the animal lifted up JJ on his shoulders, the Hawk jumped off the top rope where the cage wasn't even enough, and they broke JJ's shoulder.
No. I know. I told Hawk, don't jump, and I couldn't even say don't go.
I know. He didn't care. He did his own thing. Make no mistake about it.
Things happen in that match. I mean, that match was still, to this day, probably one of the most exciting matches in wrestling history.
For sure.
You know, I'm not saying that the guys today aren't great performers. There's a lot of great performers in our business today, but I don't think that you say the chemistry, because everything's done month to month now instead of having every 6 months to do something, the chemistry was just greater. I mean, the fans got a more invested interest in their product that they like. That's all.
Yeah. You know, it's funny because Bradshaw, when Ascension first made their debut, right, and this is one of the things that you always want to laugh about or think, boy, that's either a shot or it's like, and Ascension makes their debut on Raw, and Bradshaw goes, and these guys think they're the Road Warriors?
I know. I heard that. I actually texted when he was doing ringside promos on it. He starts laughing on it.
Bradshaw?
Said that. Thanks for the plug. I texted Bradshaw right after he said it on TV. I was watching my grandson. And I said, hey, thanks. He just like, he went LOL back, you know. I mean, I guess it's the greatest form of flattery when someone tries to imitate you. But it's like I've always said in this business, right? If I'm doing an interview and I want to try to become the greatest world champion of all time, I'm not going to get out there and say, hey, Ric Flair, you are a joke. No, I'm going to say, Ric Flair, you are the greatest champion that has ever lived. I'm going to do what I can to at least try to fill one of those shoes. I'm not going to go out there and say, hey, Road Warriors, if you're here, we're going to slap your face. Come on. The wrestling fans are going to go, are you kidding me? Well, Road Warriors would have you for lunch and spit you out and then eat you again because they don't like you. I mean, you know, it's just that kind of attitude. And I think that's one thing that has to be changed a little bit, the respect factor. There's certain guys like Rick, and I'm not saying it's on phone with you, but you, Bruno Sammartino, Andre, even Hulk Hogan, don't rip on those guys. Because you're never going to be, well, our business will never see those kind of guys ever again. So let them be off in infamy in the legend status, in the hierarchy of our business, you know? And I think, and I'm glad to say, you know, the Road Warriors are kind of in that status for tag team.
You
let us alone, man. Leave us alone.
Most definitely. Most definitely. You guys were, I mean, the biggest joke we had every night was we'd go, who's going to get the Road Warrior pop tonight?
Even
to this day, when I've gone to the ring, I'll be standing there grilling. I said, when you guys hear this to the young guys, I'm going out there tonight and getting a Road Warrior pop.
That's funny. I remember one time, you know, and I know Michael Hayes said this on our Road Warrior video that we did that sells for WWE, and he thought I was actually serious when I said this to him. I looked at him one day, and, you know, there was always between the Freebirds, well, with the tag teams, I don't know how it was, the singles match, Rick, with the tag teams, yes, there's always little hidden jabs. We were always jabbing with the Steiner Brothers were jabbing back, the Freebirds would jab, we would jab back, and I said to Michael one night, I said, hey, you hear that Road Warrior pop?
Yeah, no.
And I said that just a jab at him because, you know, I know they were wrestling some, like, probably wrestling the Mulkeys or somebody that night. You know what I mean? So I was just
the Mulkeys. Oh, wow. I hope Michael Hayes hears this.
We're in the ring with the four horsemen. They were wrestling the Mulkeys. I, you know, but I was I was just trying to jab back at him, and he thought I was serious, like, oh, boy, animals can see that. That wasn't the case at all. Everybody that knows me knows I was just joking around. So.
No, I know. It's good because, no, it's good. Back then, the guys jousted, and the guys had fun. Now they take it so damn serious. Jesus Christ, you can't say anything, man. They either go hide in the corner and cry or just get upset. You can't have the fun and the relationships where, I mean, you know, think about the joust between Arn and Lex Luger. Oh, my God.
Yeah. I know.
Arn would say, Luger would call Arn a human Super Bowl, right? And Arn would say, he'd call Luger the orthodontist dream. He said, if I had those front teeth, I could make two pearl handle revolvers up.
Yeah. I remember one time, you know, the toilet bowl scrubber, the big huge one, Hawk came in one time and said, hey, Luger, I found your toothbrush. You know, I mean, we were able to joust each other and kid around with each other about that kind of stuff back then. Today, my Lord, well, we must have joked around too much because even after Hawk's passing, what, Hawk's been gone 13 years? I must have joked around too much. I've not done one WWE fan fest or done any appearances for the company or gone on any tours because I guess I joked too much.
Because I what?
I guess I must have joked around too much or something. Or maybe,
no,
maybe
God, I don't think, you know what it is? They got, because I've been there a lot recently, they have so much going on. And now they have the, as you know, they split the brands. I mean, this, and then plus NXT is added on. It's a lot. But no, I wouldn't take that personal at all. I mean, your induction into the Hall of Fame was phenomenal. That was a great year. I see Paul Ellering all the time now. He's managing one of the teams.
Yeah. NXT, I saw
Paul, did you know that?
Paul, yeah. Paul and I still do appearances together. I saw Paul down. I just saw him a couple weeks ago. And, I know he's doing the team. Of course, you know, like everything else, everybody's always sending me texts and comparing them. I say, hey, listen, man, young guys got to start somewhere in the wrestling business, right?
Yeah, exactly. So, Conrad, you must have 1,000 questions. I mean, this guy is one of your biggest fans, Joe.
Absolutely.
And he's very knowledgeable about wrestling. So, Conrad, shoot away, man.
Well, I wanted to ask about Ole Anderson. Ole is a guy who has taken a lot of credit for your early breaks in the business, and he's a pretty controversial figure. Do you have any fun stories about working with Ole, or can you tell us what that was like?
Well, I mean, you know, Hawk and I, as well as Ravishing Rick Rude and Barry Darsel, we owe Ole our careers. I mean, you know, Ole came to the bar at Grandma B's. He was a good friend of Eddie Sharkey, who was the bartender there, who trained Jesse the Body Ventura. And, you know, when Eddie was telling us he's going to do a wrestling camp and he knows Ole Anderson, we all thought Eddie was full of crap, you know. But then we found out he did train Jesse Ventura because Jesse told him himself. And, you know, and I got one Ole story I can tell you, I guess. I guess one time, well, there's a couple good ones, I guess. You know, one time, you know, we were, when I first went down there as a road warrior by myself, okay, there was a big buyout going on with Jim Barnett and Ole Anderson with Georgia Championship Wrestling. So Ole says, I'm going to send you this guy, Jim Crockett, North Carolina for 2 months, and I'll bring you back. I said, okay, great. I'm a dumb kid. You know, I'm thinking, you know, when somebody says 1 or 2 months, they need 1 or 2 months, you're coming back. Well, I ended up going to the Carolinas, which I learned a lot. Don't get me wrong. I mean, I got in the ring with guys like Ric Flair. You know, it was a TV match where I had to tap out with a figure four, but I was in there, and Jack Briscoe. Heck, Jack Briscoe let me slam him one time on TV, and so did Ricky Steamboat. And, you know, I got to learn. I was only in the business for 1 or 2 months. But my point is, I was there for 2 or 3 months working in the Carolinas, and I remember making $150 working 9 times that week.
Wow.
Yeah. And I'm thinking to myself, how in the Lord am I going to pay child support? How am I going to do anything? So you can imagine after that 3 months, I went into Jim Crockett's office and I said, hey, Jim Crockett. I said, Mr. Crockett, I said, you know, because I called everybody Mr. Crockett the way you should in this business back then when you're a young kid. I said, listen, I can't do anything with this, and I can't make any money like this. And he said, Joe, I can't help it. I said, well, thanks for the opportunity. I actually quit wrestling and went home. And Ole called me on the phone. And I literally told Ole, I said, I was going to kill him. I was going to kick his ass, knock his teeth out, everything. I'm going to kill him. And I said, because you made me starve. I lost my cars. I lost furniture. I sold everything to pay bills and everything else. He goes, hold on, hold on, hold on. And then he happened to show one day at the Grandma B's, the bar in Minneapolis, that Eddie was there, and he showed him this picture. He goes, oh, I've already seen that picture of Joe. And Eddie says, no, that's not Joe. That's Mike. And he says, you mean to tell me there's two of these guys? He says, yeah. He goes, I'm going to bring them down on my road warrior. So Rick Rude and I and Hawk are walking. There was a place in Minnesota, Rick, I don't know if you remember this place, called the Jolly Troll. The
Smorgasbord. Of course. Of course.
Okay, we used to eat there every day for lunch because, A, it was cheap, and we were power lifters, and that's all we could afford, right? So the phone rings, and we're told, Rude, leave it alone. Rude's just some bitch calling it, because Rick's always had girls calling him all the time because he's a real good guy, and Rude was a male dancer part-time back then, the whole works, right? No, I'm going to ask. I said, man, let it go. So we take off, and he comes back, and he goes, you're not going to believe who that was. And we said, who was it? He goes, it's Ole Anderson. Joe, he wants you and I to come down tomorrow. And Mike, too. Bam, that's how the Road Warriors and Ravishing Rick Rude got started. Boom, right there like that. And brought us down there, and we went down there. And as you can imagine, my look on my face. I go down there in Georgia Championship Wrestling back there at CNN Towers, and all of a sudden I go in there, and I'm looking. There is Tito Santana. There is Sergeant Slaughter. There's Tommy Rich. There's Dusty Rhodes. There's who else? There's Buzz Sawyer. There's Dick Murdoch. There's Paul Orndorff. All these guys we've seen, they were great, great, great wrestlers. And we're going, Hawk and I are going, holy crap. You know, I guess he made it. And from that point on, Ole was true to his word, and he kept his word with us. So, yeah, it's, I mean, you know. That was one Ole Anderson story. The other one with Ole, I can tell you what kind of guy Ole is, it's kind of really kind of strange. You know, Rick's a big family guy. I know he was close to his mom and dad and everything else. I was close to mom, close to my parents and everything else. Ole cared so much about this business. I think when his dad had passed away, you know, I went to him and said, hey, man, sorry for your dad. You know, when are you going home to the funeral? He goes, I'm not going home to the funeral. And he goes, well, I said, why aren't you going home to the funeral? He goes, what can I do for him? He's gone. But yeah, that was kind of how hard nosed. That was how hard nosed Ole was. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. No, he was pretty insensitive family wise. But
No, I met you guys at the Minneapolis airport. It was you and Mike and Rude, and you were with Eddie, and I was coming through the Minneapolis airport for some reason. I think maybe I was going up to see Megan, and you guys were on your way. Do you remember that, the first time we all met?
Oh, yeah. Heck, yeah.
Yeah, you guys said, yeah, we're going to be going to Atlanta. I said, man, because here were these three big guys. This is before they had their gimmick, and then I don't know who thought of the paint and all that, but I mean, well, of course, Conrad, you saw it. They were the shit. I mean, it was what a deal. It's so easy to work with. Not only did they have their persona that was unusual, but they could work. Mike and Joe could work. I mean, you know, and that's in this time and day or any time of day to have a great gimmick and be able to work is something that's far and few between.
I think that's one thing that, you know, with Hawk and I, Conrad, that helped us as a team is I was more your serious guy. You know what I mean? I was like the buck stops here type person and everything else. And then you had Hawk, who was totally off the wall, and you never really knew what was going to come out of his mouth next. You know, which I think balanced us out. And you had Paul Ellering, who kind of wrapped everything up in a nice little bow. But don't let Flair fool you here now. Yes, Hawk and I were successful, and we could do a lot of things in the ring that a lot of real big guys weren't normally used to doing. But if we didn't have great guys in the ring that would help you learn your craft and teach you along the way, like Ric Flair, and I've always said this in the day I'll die, is that Arn Anderson and Tully Blanchard, one of the greatest tag teams ever, that's underrated in the wrestling business. You know, we learned a lot from those guys on when and your timing of doing things and you know, and getting over. And, you know, I think not losing reality and staying in touch with the reality of the fans, Conrad, like yourself, you're a fan. So when you start insulting the fans, that's when you lose them.
Right.
You know, and Hawk and I are a product of the fans, so that's what helped us stay over. And when you have guys like Flair and Anderson and Blanchard that know what the fans want to see, it makes your job so much easier when you're out there.
Yeah, well, it was easy for us, I'm telling you, because if you think about it, they could be rolling, beating the crap out of us in something you don't see anymore. I mean, like, and I actually wonder why, but, you know, Hawk would press slam me and press slam Arn, and in would come Joe, he'd press slam us, or and Tully, we'd all take the bumps and all that. You don't even see that stuff anymore. And boom, they'd be kicking our ass. And all of a sudden, Arn would hit one of them with a spine breaker. Or he'd hit him with a DDT, man. And when one of them went down, after all that momentum, I mean, Conrad, I can't tell you how easy it was to perform. I mean, because when one of those guys went down, which nobody ever thought any night was ever going to happen. But it happened, obviously, every night. But when we cut them off, man, you talk about people that were on the edge of their seats. And they sold and sold and sold, and we went to the comeback, and they went home, and we did the job, and we all got drunk.
Well, I know, right? And that's what I was saying.
I don't think we ever won a match, did we?
Well, that's what I was saying. For, like, Hawk and I, it was a piece of cake, because, I mean, imagine going out there, and, you know, you have this match, you're press slamming them. I think one time I had Tully in a press slam, I think Rick came up with the idea, I'm going to clothesline you from behind on your leg. And when he clotheslined my knee, people actually thought he blew out my knee.
You know, I hooked you with the shoulder to knee. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Whatever it was that the fact that, you know, we were invisible for the first 10 minutes, and now all down holding his leg, and those guys were like three pit bulls on it. You know, it's like, oh, there's that piece of meat. Let's go get it, you know. Type of attitude,
and you sold it like that. I mean, that's the thing. And we keep you guys in there 10, 12 minutes, getting the heat back and forth, and doing stuff that was logic, not trying to do anything where you're in the corner ducking 25 clotheslines or anything, just logical stuff. And then, boy, in came the comeback, and wow. I mean, and when it was dusty with them, you couldn't hear in the arena, Conrad. When Dusty and the Road Warriors were together, there were a lot of combinations with Nikita and Sting and Luger and that, but when Dusty was with the Road Warriors against three of us, it was insanity.
Yep.
So I do want to ask, since we're talking about Dusty, we like to talk about Dusty a lot on this show, of course, and everybody remembers he was a six-man tag champ with the Road Warriors, and then later had the famous spike in the eye segment that ultimately led to Dusty leaving the promotions. What were you guys' memories of how that went down and the backlash that it brought?
Well, you know, it's funny. I still hear about that spike, and I still have that spike in my house here. I hear about it every time I go on the road because it wasn't so much. I think it was a combination at the time that the way Dusty sold that spike and the way I was hammering that spike to him, that people went, holy crap, he's trying to take out his eye. And Dusty's telling it like, he's taking out my eye. And it wasn't just that. You know, I think, Nate, you probably agree, Conrad, you hit a great point here. It wasn't about, in today's terms, about me or Hawk getting our shine in or Dusty getting his shine in. We knew there was a time and place for everything in the wrestling business. It wasn't the wrestling business back then wasn't all about tit for tat. It'll come. Let it build. The climax will finally happen, right? So when we did that, people actually thought Dusty got his eye taken out. And I think it's a testament to the way Dusty sold it. I mean, Dusty was one of the greatest guys in the wrestling business. I'll say that right now. He not only was a great friend, I mean, Rick knew him a lot more years than I did, but with Hawk and I mean, they would be editing shows, and I would go in just to watch how Dusty would edit the show as being a producer of the show. And, Animal, what do you want in here? Get out of here. You know, and he'd let me sit in there and do it. And, you know, he'd call Hawk and I his babies or his pit bulls. You know, it's, man, I know Rick misses Dusty. I miss Dusty, man. Dusty was a great human being. You know what I mean?
Yep.
And, I mean, anytime anybody leaves a promotion, it's for their own benefit and for their own self-preservation, you know. I mean, nobody really – you really like to be able to stay – it's like the NFL. You like to stay with one team the whole time, but today's world, you're never going to do it.
Yeah. No, he was – I mean, first of all, on top of being a phenomenal performer, he was innovative as anybody – as innovative and as smart about the business as anybody I've ever known. I mean – if you think about all the things from Flair for the Gold to the War Games to, you know, Clash of Champions, all that stuff, that came all from Dusty. So, I mean, I can't say enough about him.
Hey, when they came up, Rick, with the idea, I hear about this all the time, too. When I wrestled you for the belt and Hawk wrestled you for the belt, everybody went around the Summer of Great American Bashes trying to take your title away. I mean, that's history. I mean, would you have like 60 title defenses one summer? I mean, who does that anymore? Nobody does that, you know? Nobody does that.
No, I can tell you, I wrestled you in Cincinnati in the ballpark, and I wrestled Hawk in a single match in Long Island.
Philly.
Remember? Was it Philly? Okay. Philly? You and I are Philly?
No, Hawk and you were in Philly. I was in Cincinnati.
Okay, that was pretty close. I think I wrestled Mike one time in Long Island on something too. But yeah, it was great. I mean, how easy were those matches?
Oh man, piece of cake. All I had to do was go in there and shut up and listen. It was piece of cake. Hey Conrad, the funniest thing about the match in Cincinnati, you know, the ring was set up on home plate.
Right.
Flair takes off out of the ring and says, "Follow me." He's on second base. He said, "Press sign me and carry me back to the ring." I said, "Are you kidding me? That's like 100 feet." I slammed him on top of second base and walked back to the ring myself.
I was just playing with you.
Yeah. He knew at that time it was called testing the guy if he's seen blowed up yet. He knew I was getting winded because I was already hitting my 10-minute mark, which probably was my plateau, you know.
What year do you think that would have been?
Oh, it's 86 or 87.
Yeah, the Summer of the Great American Bash, probably 87, 86.
Yeah.
Jim Crockett Promotions did phenomenal numbers in 1986. Animal, when you think back on your career, where does that year rank for you?
Well, the whole latter part of the 80s, from 86 on until the company was no longer in business, was the best time in my wrestling career. I mean, although, you know, I did achieve things, went on to win WWF titles and some other titles, some Japanese ones and different things, but still, you know, that era of wrestling, I still believe that company had, how can I say this politically, the quality and the amount of more stars, can I say, in one area. The NWA was loaded, man. You had, you know, Midnight Express, Rock Roll Express, you know, the Koloff, you know, you had Nikita, you had Dusty, Hawk and I, the Four Horsemen. Yeah, everybody. You had everybody in there. Your top four people, even though the wrestling magazines don't work, but your top in every category was all in the NWA, you know, with the exception of Hulk Hogan.
Right.
And, you know, it was great business, you know. Don't get me wrong. I mean, WWF had Hulk and Warrior and Andre and stuff, but still, a lot of the other stuff was a copy of what the NWA was doing at the time, I feel. You know what I mean?
Really, if you think about it, the Ultimate Warrior, all these guys, even Jim Hellwig, he put the paint on because of the Road Warriors. I mean, let's get serious.
When he and Sting on that tag team in the Boston territory, they painted up, and then you know I'll remember the conversation distinctly when Hawk saw the Ultimate Warrior's face job. That was the Hawk. If you remember that, Hawk used to paint that face and stop painting that one because Warriors start using it. You know, even with Sting, when I remember sitting in Jim Crockett's office one day and they said, listen, we're thinking about bringing this blonde haired guy in. And the only problem is he paints his face. And we said, who are you thinking about talking about? Sting? And Jim Crockett respected Hawk and I's opinion. And he said, hey, if it bothers you guys, we won't bring him in. We said, you know what? Nah, bring him in. We'll call him a brothers in paint. And we did that. You remember that, Rick? We did that in the beginning.
Of course.
And then, of course, then we went off with you. I mean, you groomed him and being to what he is today. But, I mean, still, I mean, you know, I mean, if we were worried about our gimmick, we would have brought another guy with paint in back then.
No, but you guys, you had to be very secure with your gimmick. I mean, God, I mean, it's like, if you think about it, and I want to ask you about this, too. When you guys got inducted in the Hall of Fame, I mean, it was classic. I mean, here's Paul, Ellering talking. Hawk, of course, wasn't there. But, you dedicated so much of it to Mike. And then, but it's just a statement as to who you guys were in the business. And, I mean, your name is still, you know, you say the Road Warriors to this day. And it's not like somebody looking around going, who? I mean, the name is still out there and still very prominent. And, you know, that's why we are elated to have you as a guest on the show today because you guys were that special. Would you agree, Conrad?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, I don't know that there'll ever be another one. I mean, there certainly won't. I mean, from the Road Warrior pop to the paint to the shoulder pads, and there was a lot of, I don't know, they say imitation is the most sincere form of flattery, and I've always wanted to know your take on Demolition. Set the record straight. Do you consider Demolition a ripoff or an homage, or what are they to the Road Warriors in your opinion, Animal?
Well, you know, I think it's like Rick said, you know, I think Hawk and I were very secure in what we had as a gimmick. And to be honest with you, Conrad, the truth of the matter is Hawk and I, in essence, we were the Road Warriors. We were two guys that got taken off the street, right out of the bar, we did fight a lot. I mean, it's not nothing to be proud of, but that's what we did. We, when we were younger, had to collect money from people that were the undesirable type, let's just say. And we knew, because, Barry Darso, Smash Demolition, is one of my dearest friends. I've known Barry since I was 17 years old. But we knew when Demolition was formed, and Bill Eadie, I knew, I wrestled him as a mass superstar in the past, that now you had two wrestlers trying to portray two fighters. There's a big difference that, you know what I mean?
Right.
I mean, I think it's easier, and I think Rick will agree, it's easier to be raw and be a fighter, and if you have talent to be able to groom into a wrestler, than it is for a wrestler to go back and try to be a shoot fighter. You know what I mean? I mean, very few could do it. I mean, Brock does it because Brock does both. He is a real fighter, and he is a wrestler. You know what I mean? But I mean, does that make sense, Rick?
If you're good at what you do, which you guys were, I don't care how many people come along and try and do something that you have already done, you're always going to be recognized as the premier team. Does that make sense? I'm glad Barry and Bill made some money, and they're both good friends of mine, Barry especially. But they're never going to be considered the Road Warriors. And I don't say this with any – I'm not saying this to hurt anybody's feelings because I just see Barry and God, you know, how close, how much fun we had with Barry Garso, my God. And me and Bill Eadie. Had a lot of fun with Bill, too. Old Blue Eyes.
Okay, Animal, in the book, you tell the story about first meeting Vince McMahon in his house. I've always been curious, what was that experience like, and why didn't you get there earlier? And then I guess I'd like for you to answer why you're not doing anything there these days.
Well, I think, you know, why we didn't go there earlier, Jimmy Crockett was nice enough to offer us a very nice contract when we were at the NWA. And with Ric Flair and Hawk and I, we were all part of that first group of guys that were going to get guaranteed money in the wrestling business. So when we went to Vince's house, you know, he did the old dog and pony show. We went to his house. He had, she was a Chinese chef, and Rick has been there too. He's met her and, you know, made us food, authentic Chinese food, which is great. We had the conversation. And we said, listen, Vince, we have X amount of dollars that we need to make that we're getting guaranteed. And he came up with the old, well, all I can guarantee here is opportunity. And I said, huh. And, you know, and we've been around the business a long time already. We've already been in the wrestling like 10, 11 years. And, you know, when he left and walked out of the room, of course, there was Roddy Piper's freaking royalty statement right there on his desk. Like, we're not going to look at it, right? It's right in front of us. It's like 2 inches away.
Roddy Piper's what?
His royalty statement.
His royalty statement.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Royalty
yeah.
statement, you know. But it was all only on the big amount. It wasn't on how much you get after you get your, he gets his 95% and you get yours, you know. So, anyway, so we looked at it. We said, well, thank you for the opportunity. And that's when we went back and we stayed with the NWA. And we had a nice contract with them. And then that's when Demolition got formed. We weren't back a month, and then all of a sudden they came up with Demolition, you know? And
so these days, though, it's got to be a little tough, you know, with you having a brother there. I know you've had your issues with WWE, but with your brother kind of being on the inner circle, so to speak, that has to be difficult. How have you been able to manage that, and why aren't you doing more with them these days?
Well, I think Rick will tell you, and one thing that I respect about Ric Flair's opinion, Rick knows that myself more than my partner Hawk, I've always been a student of the wrestling business, right? I like to pick guys' minds, and I always made it very clear to Vince when I went and worked for WWF at WWE that when I'm done someday, I would love to be behind the scenes. I would love to be an agent, what Arn Anderson does, because Arn's got a great mind for business, or being a head coach down in Orlando, or being one of the guys that goes around to the internationally to look for talent. I think Rick will tell you that that's probably pretty much a tailor-made job for me. You know what I mean? And
yes,
I would
agree totally.
I mean, I've tried 1,000 times to get back into that company since Hawk's passing for the last 13 years. And I've never burnt a bridge there. I've never had a disagreement with Vince. I have never got disagree with his wife, with Stephanie, with Paul, with Hunter, with anybody. So I can't really tell you why I'm there, why I'm not there. All that I know is that there's something that went on. Maybe it was the fact. I mean, I know Hawk threatened Vince's family once or twice under duress, and I don't know if I got caught by guilty by association with that. But, you know, it's you got to remember, Hawk and I were not something that was invented by WWF either. We were kind of, it's like Ric Flair. We were kind of like the outside a little bit. You know what
yeah,
I mean?
And that's the truth. We're the only people probably that came with the same, they didn't alter identity at all. So that's one of the things.
Yeah, I think we are. You and us are the only two that came from the NWA or WCW days that they didn't alter. I mean, I remember point blank when we went to wrestle the Hart Foundation and we were doing a TV up in New York City somewhere with a little Manhattan Center or something.
Right.
And, Vince told us, he goes, we're going to have to repackage you guys up here in the East Coast. Nobody knows who we are up here in the Northeast. And I looked at Vince. I said, they don't have Turner Broadcasting up here? They don't have cable? Well, yeah, they do, but this is USA Network. So it's okay. So he put us against the Hart Foundation. Now, this is the first time we ever wrestled at the Manhattan Center. And yeah. The Hart Foundation were the champs. They were Hart Foundation were the champs. Great guys. We got along good with Brett and Jim. No problem. We went down to the ring. Rick, we had an ovation like it was going down to Philly that night or down to Baltimore.
I know all about it. I know. I had just left and come back, and you guys went by. We kind of traded places.
Yeah, and the people went absolutely nuts. And I'm going, well, I guess they know who we are. And there was really no finish to the match or anything, you know. So, I mean, you know, and so I think we proved the point. And all you want to do business. Listen, were there a lot of hiccups? Yes. My partner had issues. Okay, I'm the first to admit it. I admitted it in my book and everything else. But, you know, it is what it is, and you shouldn't hold me responsible for his issues if that was the case. Listen, my main thing, like everybody's is, like Rick's is in his business, is to pass the torch to those who appreciate it and are qualified to carry the torch and further on the business and help the business grow. That's been my ambition since I got into it. It's been my ambition. Still my ambition now, man. I would love to be involved with the wrestling business somehow, some form, some way.
And well, I'm sure it'll happen. I called Johnny to get your number because I thought we traded numbers when I saw you in New Jersey, but we didn't. So I called Johnny yesterday to get your number. So, I mean, this is a pretty, Conrad, I don't think you understand. This is the Joe Laurinaitis, John Laurinaitis, I mean, their brother Mark, I mean, what a great family, and I'm friends and stay close to all of them. John is not the head of talent relations anymore. If he were, he probably would bring you on, but, you know, having been there so much, Joe, it's more than political now to get a job there. I mean, the road agent jobs are, those guys work their ass off, man. I mean, Conrad's gone backstage with me, and he's seen it all. It's a thankless job. I know they make a nice living, but working backstage is not all you probably think it is. Because man, it's a 12-hour day, on pay per view weekends, it's a 12-hour day, 3 days in a row. I mean. And now, and the guys drive sometimes as much as 300 miles a night.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's not like jumping on the Falcon 10 and going to Greenville.
But you know me. I mean, it's like when I used to make the sacrifice to fly home and coach all my kids when the kids are playing sports and they're younger. I mean, yeah. I love that coaching aspect of it. And I mean, Dusty put my name into the hat for, being one of the assistant head coaches down there in Orlando, which, you know, I got family down there, would have been up for me to move. So I wouldn't mind that. You know, any kind of thing to be involved with the company, you know, or be involved with the business. Because I think that my whole philosophy is, Rick, now, just like with yourself, if you want somebody to really become a good world champion, and I'm going to say this, and I'm giving Rick a good compliment here, Sting wouldn't have been Sting if it wasn't for Flair teaching him how to be Sting, you know, and the same goes for Hunter. Triple H learned how to be a great single wrestler because he got in the ring with Flair. You know, you learn things when you're in the ring with the best, and I think passing that information on, you can't get to the Super Bowl unless you played somebody who's been in the Super Bowl numerous times. You can't understand how it is to play in that Super Bowl unless you've been there. Same thing with tag team wrestling. I think I have a lot.
I appreciate that compliment, and I totally agree.
Well, you know, and for my end, for the tag team era, listen, after all these years, Hawk being gone 13 years now, and because of, thank God for the internet and, you know, the WWE Network, because they keep my gimmick, liver, just as live today as it was when I retired. You know, the road where
YouTube too. Are you kidding?
Yeah, it's just as popular. So, I mean, I would love to have been able to pass on that tag team torch because I think the tag teams need that kind of help from somebody that's been to that level of competition. That's all. That's my point with that, Conrad. I mean, I just, you know, I'm not trying to be, hey, let's pat me on the back or anybody on the back type deal. It's just that facts are facts. You don't get to that position you get to in our business by accident, you know.
So Joe, I know I'm taking more of your time than I promised, but there's so much with us. So one of the greatest stories that a lot of people don't know is when John left Japan, he applies for the job at WCW, right?
Yeah.
And he meets Bischoff on neutral territory. Bischoff hires him. He signs the contract. About a week later, he called. He said, if I had known you were related to the fucking Road Warriors, I'd have never fucking hired you. No, that's because Mike told him off all the time. Mike almost beat him up one time. Once again, Joe's just guilty association.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. You know, my poor brother. Hey, but you know what? John's done great. John's good at what he does. You know,
he's great at it.
I gotta give to John. He does a really good job of what he's. You know, now he's involved with the whole Bella thing, and you know all about that. So you know.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, I. By the way, I've never seen him happier. I was just hanging out with him in jail a year or 2 years ago, so I didn't even know what was going on.
Yeah, unfortunately, I kind of been around it, you know, John's whole bear. Yeah. John kept everything close to the chest, but I kind of knew about it. You know, hey, sometimes you never know the person. I mean, look at my situation. You never know. I never ever thought that my ex would be like that either, you know, but it is what it is. But John is happy now. Kathy's a great woman, you know, and everything else. And, you know, hey, it is what a crazy Christmas that would be.
Yeah, I know what I was thinking, because when I saw Joe about 2 years ago, I thought he was still married to Julia. That was Joe's wife's name. And I can tell you, this is what a great guy Joe Laurinaitis, their animal, is. Julie had the septic, what's the thing called that she had because of the implants?
Fibromyalgia?
What's it called? Fibromyalgia. And almost... Conrad, Joe, correct me if I'm wrong, she was in the hospital time and time again. She got really, really violently sick. Am I correct?
Yeah.
Yeah, but Joe, man, he was right there. I mean, on a plane, I got to go home to Julie. So I never even imagined that they had any issues. And I saw, and, you know, once again, it's just funny how life works.
I mean, you know, it's kind of funny. You know, you find out through the grapevine what happens behind closed doors. And I found a lot of stories from not only my kids but other friends that I do around the neighborhood. I mean, listen, it just goes to show you that the evil sometimes that pills and liquor can do to even the greatest people. But, you know, hey, that's all behind me now. That's in the past. But I got a great woman now, Kim. She's phenomenal. I couldn't be happier. I'm the happiest I've been ever in my life. Things are going great. I got 5 grandkids now.
Wow.
I mean, can you believe that?
Jesus Christ. You got more kids than I got.
I know, right? Grandpa, I'm good. You know, I got a birthday next month.
I'm Papa.
Yeah, that's what I meant. I'm too. I'm Papa. That's what I'm called. Funny, right? They call me Papa. You know, my grandson Jacob's 5 and Claire's 7, and I got 2 twins that are 2 years old. And then my son James's daughter, London, is going to be 2 here in about 2 weeks. So, you know. It's a great time, you know. Things are going good. Nate, you love this. James has texted me this morning. He got voted captain by the New Orleans Saints today again. So
wow, that's great, man. Yeah, hey, listen, I got to tell one story, and then we'll talk about James for a second. And Conrad, also, Joe's daughter was the best hockey player in the state of Minnesota for several years. Did she ever play in college, Joe?
You know, she played at where she went down the, she had full rides, but because of GPA, she couldn't go D1. So she ended up going down to St. Olaf and got, like, Defensive Rookie of the Year. And then, well, then came Jacob. So that ended the hockey career, you know?
Yeah. You know? So. No, well, here's the deal. So I go to Japan, and again, I tell two stories. It was Joe's birthday, and I can't think of the name of that steakhouse. So me, Joe, Ellerine, and Hawk.
Bahama Steakhouse.
Bahama. It was Joe's birthday. My tab was $3,000 feeding that son of a bitch. Yeah, I mean, feeding Hegstrand and him and Ellerine. And then, of course, you know, eating all the garlic and drinking the beer and wine, that steakhouse was awesome. And then the next morning, I tell people this story all the time. They think I'm full of shit. But Animal can vouch for it. We were in a 55-story hotel. And me and Ellerine, every morning for that whole week, would go up and down the fire escape twice. Remember, Joe?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I remember that.
The 500 free squats or the staircase or the stairs, all the 55 floors, man.
Pacific Hotel. Was it the Pacific Hotel?
Yeah, Pacific. Yeah, that's it. Yep. Whatever, how many stories that sucker is, man, Ellerine and I would compete every day. He didn't drink that much. It was harder on me.
No. Yeah.
But anyway, we would get there, and we'd go to the Narita, the airport, and I would buy my kids, you know, like a couple thousand dollars worth of stuff, because you could buy stuff there that wasn't available in the States, and Mike and Joe would take all this stuff back to Minneapolis to give to David and Megan. And I'll never be able to thank you enough for that. They were so excited, and he would land, and he would go home and see his family. Then he would drive over to see Megan and take her stuff and David, and I'll never be able to thank you enough for that. I mean, that's the kind of relationship we had back in those days, man. I feel sad for people that don't have that kind of relationship.
No, man, we were able to be actual friends back then. Hey, Conrad, if you can imagine when TSA looked through my bag at security and they saw 14 Cabbage Patch dolls. Japanese director set with Rick and Godzilla on it and stuff, you know, and here I am carrying it all in my bag with my spike pads and, no, really, I'm a road warrior, I swear to God I'm at.
That's hilarious.
They thought you were a toy salesman.
Oh man, it was funny.
Well, we can't thank you enough for being on the show today. We appreciate you taking so much time with us.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me on the show.
Thank you very much. We appreciate all the time.
Animal, thanks, man. God bless, buddy.
You too, man. What a rush.